And tonight will be an important night of some updates on Coast to Coast. All this week, many of you have been following the travails of the people of Egypt as they've been trying to get rid of a dictator in Hosni Mubarak. And, you know, I mean, there are your despotic dictators, and then there's somewhere on the scale Hosni Mubarak. And, you know, he was kind of fell into that great classic, he may be a dictator, but he's our dictator kind of thing. So we kind of look the other way on a lot of stuff. But a lot of the stories we've been covering over the years on Coast to Coast AM crisscross into his paths. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens in a Mubarak-less Egypt in the weeks ahead. And we know we'll be covering that here on Coast to Coast as it could develop into what some people are predicting, perhaps the first tipping point of a domino fall that could result in tragic consequences for Israel, for the Middle East, for the United States. Some people saying, I'm not endorsing this theory myself, but that this is the first in a series of events that will lead up to international Armageddon implications for the year 2012. And that we watched it in real time, and whatever it will be that's happening, we'll be continuing to watch it as long as they allow news cameras there. And that is a question mark. But anyway, cross your fingers, say your prayers, and hopefully no more people will be hurt, and it will be a peaceful democracy from this point forward, too. You heard, however, that Switzerland has frozen Hosni Mubarak's funds, that somehow, as president of Egypt, he had amassed billions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars that were in funds in Switzerland, and now those are frozen. How did he make that money? Well, you could say, as Jesse told me tonight, perhaps pyramid schemes. All I know is for sure is that several times this week, Hosni Mubarak was thinking about leaving office, and he was pretty sure the Egyptian people wanted him out, but he could only get as far as denial. There you go. So, now, as for some other stories in the news, it's, like I said, a kind of a night of updates. Three different guests tonight, and we'll start with May Pang coming up in just a moment, but three different guests who have seen their name pop up recently in the news. I've been following all of these stories, these revelations about Scientology, brings us back to a guest we had a little over a year ago who had written a book on his escape from Scientology. And in his case, it literally was an escape from Scientology. The things that he claimed in his book, the night that he was on, got him attacked by a couple of callers who said this, you know, they're Scientologists and this didn't happen. And there's no way that Scientology would do these sorts of things, et cetera. But now all of the things that Mark Headley said so long ago have been featured in a couple of news stories that all came up in the last 7 or 8 days about various aspects of Scientology. And we'll talk about that next hour. Every claim he's made, it would seem, has gotten backed up by other people who have recently quit and decided to tell all about what's happening inside the walls of Scientology. That's coming up next hour. Brian Toohey was on last week. He made a prediction. Brian Toohey wrote the book, The Fix Is In. His website is thefixisin.net. And on that website, at the end of our time together, he said that he would put up information on his website that would predict the outcome of the Super Bowl. He said he had gotten it on high authority from somebody within the organization, within an organization, I should say. I don't know which because he won't say. That was going to reflect what would happen on the field and at the end of the game. And he put his prediction on his website just before kickoff. He said everybody should go there, take a look at it. And it was oddly accurate. Not to him, no coincidence as far as he's concerned, but he'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on this hour. How did he get that information, and how close did he come to predicting the outcome to last Sunday's Super Bowl? And May Pang, who's been on the show before, she is a photographer. She is an author. We had her on for the book Instamatic Karma, photographs of John Lennon. She was John Lennon's girlfriend for a long time. And, you know, one of those figures in pop culture history, which has always fascinated. Well, she's in the news for something good, and she'll talk about that coming up in just a second. So all of these updates, plus some open line calls this hour, get us started on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right. So, again, we'll get to some open line calls at the bottom of the hour. A couple of quick updates from some previous guests on Coast to Coast. And by the way, there's some very cool stories, too, tonight at coasttocoastam.com, as always. But I always follow May Pang. I'm always interested in what she's doing. And I love the fact that she came on here when her book Instamatic Karma came out and told the most complete version that I've ever heard of the story of the night that John Lennon and she saw a UFO over New York City. But you got to love her artwork, too. And just to, so everybody knows about it, there's an exhibit that's going on even as we speak in New York of her photographs and the photographs of some other prominent people who have taken pictures of the Beatles. Good evening, May Pang.
Good evening, Ian. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm always good. And I'm just I love the theme of this art exhibit. So I just wanted to make sure that Beatles fans listening to Coast knew about it. And as always, too, to go back and take a look at your book, Instamatic Karma, which is so charming.
Thanks. It's called the exhibition is called All You Need Is Love. And it's photographs that I'm exhibiting from my book, limited edition prints of John that I have up and one of Paul and Julian. And then we also have a photograph by Nancy Lee Andrews, who was Ringo's fiance for about 6 years, just prior to Barbara Bach. So if anybody couldn't figure
right
out when.
Sure.
And she had a book. She also has a book out called Dose of Rock and Roll. And she's put out some pictures of George Harrison and Ringo. And then we have this artist who is like the most fabulous Beatles artist ever, and her name is Shannon. So the three of us got together, and we've put this show on at the National Arts Club in New York, and it's on until the 15th. And they can go and see it if anybody's out there in New York.
And they should. And if not, always, you know, that the book you wrote was so charming, and I love the stories that you told, and the pain of your experience with John Lennon stays with me. It'll always change the way I look at that whole experience, as you were originally an assistant for John and Yoko until you got your new assignment, which from Yoko was essentially go become his girlfriend.
Yeah, well, you know, the only difference really was everybody says, yeah, you know, go become his girlfriend. And I looked at her like, you got to be kidding me. I'm not interested.
Right.
And if it wasn't for the fact that John himself chased after me after a while, because
right,
I really fought off this idea because I thought this was silly.
Right.
And if he didn't come after me, I probably would never have even thought twice about it, never even thought about it once. And I had no idea he was even interested in me. And, you know, but being with him, I gave it a shot. We became a couple. He was the first man I ever lived with. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to top that after
right,
a while.
Exactly.
You know,
that's an intimidating aspect of the next boyfriend, isn't it?
And, you know, it was crazy. But the thing is, you know, a lot of people thought, and I'll bring this up for one, everybody thought, oh, well, you know, she was an employee, so she's paid, because I've seen that. And I said, no.
Oh, yeah.
Because once I was with John, I was no longer employee at all. So there's a lot of myths behind all of this because people thought that John wasn't talking to Yoko. Yoko called us every day. So this was not, and she was also dating. That's
so
what the
weird
other thing was.
Yeah, she's dating.
Yes, but we never talk about that. We only talk about me.
That's so,
so
weird.
So that's what happened. So, you know, and the whole thing about, you know, Elton saying, you know, after the Elton John concert that he went back. And that's not true either, because Julian came over, we saw Paul, we saw George. This was after the Elton John concert at Madison Square Garden. But you know what? There's a lot of everybody sticking to the party line myth.
Sure,
So.
Sure. Well, good. Better for them to get the story from you. And cool about these photographs. I'm a big fan of Beatles artwork, and it's interesting how the Beatles are coming back into vogue again. They were in the news this week. The claim is that the expense to get the Beatles catalog for Guitar Hero killed the franchise. That
oh
they
God.
Spent. Did you hear that? That the
no,
expense. Oh, that it was so expensive to get the rights for Guitar Hero that there will never be another Guitar Hero. They went out of business.
Oh my God, that's outrageous. Oh
yeah.
Goodness.
But I think it also speaks though to the new popularity of the Beatles, or for the enduring popularity of the Beatles. And I hope they get a chance to go to your exhibit. Now, will you be there any more? Are you making any more appearances yourself at the exhibit?
I probably will not, but I mean, you know, that always changes. I was just there on Friday. So, you know, I come in and out until then. So there's a possibility. I mean, if they call up and we find out there's a bunch of people that want to see me, then, you know, I'll try
right.
to find a way to get in there.
I hope you do. I hope you do, too.
You know, and I'm going to be doing another art exhibit in San Francisco in May. On May 13th, I'll be in San Francisco, and I'll be going to a gallery there at 101 Minas Gallery, I believe.
Oh, good. Oh, yes. Good. I will. So we can give the advanced word on that, and I hope that people get a chance to see you in San Francisco as well. And always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good night, dear. Appreciate that. That's May Pang on Coast to Coast AM. Now, last week, Brian Toohey was on. We've had him on a couple of times talking about his claim that professional sports is fixed often from a variety of sources, but most prominently and least talked about from the inside, from the top down, and that professional sports protects its interests by creating its storylines that they want its fans to follow, and that they can nudge outcomes of games using officiating and other means without explicitly saying this will be the final score or this is how the game's going to end, where they can just sort of imply down the line it would be sure would be neat if this would be the outcome. And so often happens that is exactly the case, even inexplicably. And so Brian Toohey was on last week talking about the fixes, and we're talking about the Super Bowl last week, and he said he was going to put something up on his website just before kickoff that would predict the outcome of the game. And I think it's only fair to say we had to have him back for a victory lap, regardless of whether it's exactly the way he says it was. That was pretty darn close, Brian Toohey.
It was, and the question is how much money then, Ian, did you get down on the Packers before kickoff?
I will never bet on the Packers to win ever.
No.
Ever.
<Yeah. It's>
but I appreciated the shout out on your webpage on that. So, but fair is fair. Packers won. Explain what you put up on your webpage, thefixesin.net, just before kickoff time, and as best as you can explain it, the source of that information that you put up there.
Well, I can't reveal this, one of the sources I have. It's kind of a thing I'm still trying to develop. And I, to be honest, I don't know exactly 100% what his background is. I just know that he sent me some emails, we've communicated, and some of the information he's gives me has been accurate further than I would imagine it could be.
Okay.
But besides him, I mean, my own knowledge of what I believe is going on professional sports helped make this prediction, as well as the information I had before kickoff that Billy Walters, who's basically the biggest sports gambler in the United States, who was featured on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, supposedly, and I don't know if this is true, but it's what I heard before kickoff too, is that he supposedly bet $1 million to $1.5 million at the Bellagio on the Packers to win.
So the implication there, if he was going to put that kind of money down on the Packers, that would indicate that he knew what the outcome of the game was, not just what he thought, but that he knew, or he wouldn't be betting that high.
He does get games wrong. I mean, he's not 100% accurate with his, you know, betting at all, but he's more accurate than most.
Okay.
So having what I know, what his bet was, this inside information, all that, so I put it all together and I made this prediction, And the prediction was basically that the referees weren't going to call penalties. They weren't going to make it controversial.
Toward the end of the game, you said in the second half, you said that it was the second half that the refs were going to lay off the flags.
Yeah, they were going to let it go. And in my opinion, too, because of the controversy surrounding the Steelers this year with Ben Roethlisberger's rape charges or allegations, I should say, Hines Ward, the receiver who has been critical of the NFL of late, wants the 18-game season that the players don't want. And then James Harrison on the Steelers, who was fined a couple of times for helmet-to-helmet hits, and, you know, he's also very critical of the NFL. I didn't see a way that, you know, Roger Goodell was going to hand Roethlisberger, any member of the Steelers, the Super Bowl trophy this year. I think it was all geared to make sure that the Packers won and that Aaron Rodgers was lifted up to this new pantheon of, you know, great quarterbacks. And that's what drives the ratings in the NFL are quarterbacks.
Yeah, quarterbacks and MVPs. And he's becoming the MVP, not just a great quarterback statistically, but recognized as the MVP. Now, I liked when you put in the prediction, you said you thought that the refs would be involved in some controversial calls to keep the game close and then lay off of the flags toward the end of the game. And you actually said in this piece on your website before kickoff that the game could very easily end in a tie that might go to overtime, and it got pretty close to that, and that it would end in a non-call, a controversial non-call by the referees. I thought that was the most interesting thing that you predicted because nobody else was saying that.
No, and I actually thought it was going to go into overtime. When the Steelers went for that two-point conversion and made it 28-25, I thought for sure the Packers were going to go four and out, kick back to the Steelers. They were going to drive down, kick the field goal, and we'd have overtime. But instead, Packers drove all the way down the field very easily, somehow bogged down right at the goal line, kicked the field to go up six, and then gave the Steelers enough time to go downfield. And I've actually got a lot of emails, thanks to the show, from fans who watched the Super Bowl and said, you know, something didn't seem right about that game. And a lot of Steeler fans who contacted me said, especially that last two-minute drive by the Steelers, seemed not to be the Steeler team they've seen all season. It seemed
all right.
They weren't doing all that they could have. And then, yeah, that very last play on fourth down where it should have been maybe, you know, it's one of those ticky-tack things where it could have very well been pass interference, but it wasn't. And instead, the Packers got the ball back and won the game right there.
Well, there have been many other places where that exact play would have resulted in a defensive interference called the very end of the game. Whether it was pass interference or not, I think a lot of people thought even the broadcast group said, oh, that could have been, that was looked like defensive interference. And then on further review, they went, oh, well, maybe not. So I'm just saying there were lots of times when that call during the season would have gone to the offense on the benefit of the doubt, at least by appearances. So however you look at the final call, I just thought it was very interesting that you said the game could easily end on a non-call by a referee and that was the word you had gotten in advance. And I thought, okay, that was a little freaky weird. I mean, it coincidence or no, I don't know. But that was a bold prediction on your part. And you put it in print and you came remarkably close to being right.
You know, it's interesting, too, that I think one of the things that maybe was part of this game was the fact that the last two Super Bowls that the Steelers were in that they won, penalties played a huge role in it. Like when they played the Cardinals, there was 18 penalties in that game, but 11 of them were on the Cardinals. And when they played the Seahawks, there were only 10 penalties in that game, but 7 of them were on the Seahawks. And so a lot of fans out there, Steeler fans or not, have said, you know, the NFL has been giving Super Bowls to the Steelers based, you know, on these penalties. And so that's one of the things that I took into account going into this Super Bowl, that they weren't going to give the Steelers a Super Bowl.
They weren't going to get the break this time.
And yeah, if it came down to them right at the end having the ball, they're not going to get the call. And a lot of people say that's exactly what happened with that pass interference.
Well, you can link up to Brian Toohey's website by going to coasttocoastam.com. You can grab a copy of his book and argue with that because it's full of specifics and footnotes and interviews. And it's not just one sports fan sitting on a couch yelling at the television. It's you really rolling up your sleeves and you're getting a lot into these FBI files. And I think we want to hear more about them. The more you get into the FOIA files, the more you should keep us in mind, find out more about some of the things that have been investigated about professional sports. And let's get back on the air sometime about that. Okay, Brian?
Yeah, I'll definitely keep in touch.
All right, appreciate that. And we'll be thinking of you. We get into the Final Four or later on the NBA or NHL championships. We'll keep an eye on some of the things that are often said and what can actually be proven about the fix being in professional sports. Let's do open lines before we talk with Mark Headley. We had him on a couple years ago to talk about his escape from Scientology. And he has been followed. He is being shadowed still by Scientology. He'll explain that coming up after the top of the hour. And then we'll get into the stories about the things that he claimed in his book, which now others are coming out and saying was exactly right on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We're great with some Saturday night fighting as long as it's not on the phones. Never in the mood for that. However, grab an open line right now. We've got a few minutes. We'll do some open line calls before the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. And we bring Mark Headley back. The claim was made in the news this week that there is slave labor going on in Sea Org, the organization that is within the ranks of Scientology, and that several prominent people within Scientology get essentially treated like pharaohs. If Scientology denies this, fair enough. But these are some of the things that were being said a couple years ago when we had Mark Headley on. He had written a book about his escape from Scientology. You can find out more about that by linking up to him at our website. But much of that will wait for next hour. The claims of others who have left Scientology, the things which they said are going on, which are shocking and worthy of the spotlight coming up later on Coast to Coast. In the meantime, we'll grab your open line calls next. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so let's get to open line calls before the top of the hour. I know we're going to be busy tonight on Coast to Coast. The phones just lit up right away as soon as we said we're going to go to some open lines. And that always means that people got a lot to say. AJ is in Fort Myers, Florida, to get us started on Coast to Coast. AJ?
Hey, Ian. The song was right. Saturday night is a night for fighting.
Okay, good. I hope that we mean that much more in a sense of energy, not necessarily actually going out and getting in a knife fight tonight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I wanted to get your thoughts on mixed martial arts and mixed martial arts fighters.
I like mixed martial arts. I have a friend who's kind of an expert on that. I don't know if you do you follow? Who do you like to follow?
I follow all of the biggies. I follow Fedor Emelianenko, Antonio Bigfoot Silva, Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, Brock Lesnar. I follow pretty much everybody.
Well, Brock Lesnar, they're a good Minnesota boy. Here, I'll give you a name, okay? So you go Google this tonight. His name is Kyle Sheely, S-H-I-E-L-Y, Kyle Sheely. He's a friend of mine, and he is an expert on both the sport and the business of mixed martial arts. He writes the No Holds Barred e-newsletter. Do you get that?
I'm kind of visually impaired. I'm not that great on the computer. But I'm trying to get better.
Good. Well, I'll say everything I know about mixed martial arts, I know because of Kyle. So every conversation I've ever had about mixed martial arts is with Kyle, and he's an expert. And if you ever get it, if you ever get the newsletter or have somebody share it with you, if it's difficult to get it yourself, I think you really enjoy it because he follows everything. He knows everything. And it's worth it. Again, you can Google his name, Kyle Sheely, S-H-I-E-L-Y. Happy to give him a shout out because he's been doing good work on mixed martial arts long before a lot of people had ever even heard of it. Joel is in Montana, open lines on Coast to Coast. Joel?
Ian, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for
waiting. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Say, listen, man, I've been listening to you since you came on the air. and, you know, normally liked it until this year, until all this Packer hate started coming out on the
I've been hating the Packers forever. So if you've missed my anti-Packer.
Yeah, but you gotta give him some skin, man. Your guest there, and he was saying about the Steelers, you know, Roethlisberger, they not wanting to hand him a trophy or the linebacker. Man, those guys got beat. Green Bay beat everybody.
That's fine. That's totally fine. You take up his prediction with him, but you will never convince me to be a Packer fan. Sorry about that, Joel. Hope that won't be a deal breaker between us, but I've so loathed the whole we are superior because we are Packer fans thing, and I've had to live with it my whole life, and Packer fans are the best fans and all that other stuff, and no thanks. Packer fans are like anybody else. Packers are like anybody else, and I'm, you know, taking nothing away from their victory other than what, you know, Brian predicted. He put it on a website before the game, and it ended up being kind of close. He said it was inside information, thought that's worthy of a mention. Carlos is in Carson, California, on Coast to Coast. Carlos?
Yes, good evening, Ian. You know, back in Egypt, what's going on over there, I think, is a little bit deceptive.
Okay.
It's being characterized as a spontaneous uprising by the people, and sure, there's a great measure of that.
Carlos, do you call every week?
No, I don't. I talked to you about 3 weeks ago. Sometimes I go on months without calling you.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
No, yeah, but
you call all the time, and the call always ends up in the same place. But go ahead.
Because, you know, there's a lot of important stuff going on. People need to know, but there's a lot of deception going on. No, look, for instance, El Baradei, who's leading one of the leaders of the uprising, who's also developed ties with the Muslim Brotherhood, He belongs to a group called the International Crisis Management. But guess who else belongs to that group? George Soros.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you know anything about George Soros, he's got a quantum fund with a lot of money. He's been creating all the color revolutions in the Middle East and destabilizing economies with his currency manipulation, all that. But guess what? When you start going and searching further, you realize that NNM Rothschild of the Rothschild banking family owns a chunk of his quantum fund. So, in essence, international banking out of Wall Street in London are running the whole scenario back there behind the scenes.
Why would they have to run it behind the scenes if for years they've been running it in the front of the scenes? Why do they have to go behind the scenes?
Well, because very few people really know that it's them. Look, you listen to Glenn Beck, for instance. He mentions George Soros, but he doesn't mention anything about the Rothschild banking family of London running all these revolutions because they want to use radical Islam as Asian provocateurs then to give them the justification to send our military as we went into Iraq and then seize the oil and then they're using that oil out of Iraq now to be transferred to Israel and then to China. So you see there's a whole deception. They use radicalism historically has been financed by the oil corporations and the Saudi royal family, who's an agent for the oil corporations, and the banking centers of London and Wall Street, and they're being used as agent provocateurs. But the news media is portraying them as a bunch of maniacs who want to create a caliphate, a one-world government, when in reality, the one-world government is an international banking world government. They're just using radical Islam as a front, and they're deceiving everybody.
All right. Well, then you say everybody, that would include you, but you're not. And so there you go. They haven't gotten everybody yet, Carlos. Let's go to Russ, who's in Washington, wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Russ?
Greetings and namaste.
Namaste.
Sorry.
It's okay. Namaste does not mean hairball. So,
I didn't mean to choke on that.
It's all right. Well, it's all right.
I meant it sincerely.
Thank you.
I understand the meaning of namaste. You seem to be kind of focused on sports, I've noticed. And
I'm not focused on sports. Nope.
Kind of.
We did a segment, about 10 minutes, and we mentioned last week we had talked to Brian Toohey. That was the first time in a while. Yes.
Right. Well, you know, your various be- beginnings of the program focus on sports often.
I will mention the sports of the day. Okay, I will mention the sports of the day. Yes.
Anyway, that's fine, except, you know, if you go along with the New World Order bit, back in the turn of the last century, 1900s, sports was pretty much just for kids. You know, when we grew up, we did adult things.
Hey.
It wasn't until, you know, this New World Order movement got going real good that all of these sports teams and stadiums popped up all over across the country as a kind of a tribal focus for men to keep them from looking into real things like I've been doing for the last year and a half.
Ah, well, okay. So laying the fault at the feet of sports fans, let's move on to what is it?
Not totally.
What is it that we should be focusing on then?
Well, you know, I've been doing this study on the tuning of music from 440 to 432, what it's been since Greek times. Stradivarius is tuned to the 432 for A, middle A. They're worried about these instruments being hurt by tuning them too tight to 440 hertz, which was endorsed by Joseph Goebbels. That's the only reason I really started looking into this, because Joseph Goebbels proposed it, endorsed it. The culmination of my study in the last week, I've been doing math for 16 hours a day.
Okay, you got to watch some baseball. If you're doing math 16 hours a day, you really ought to get into hoops. You know, you could. March Madness is coming up, dude. You could really relax with some college basketball. I think if you're doing math 16 hours a day.
Hey, there's another thing, baseball. You know, I used to like baseball. You know, until they went on strike. Oh, $1 million isn't enough. I don't want $2 million.
I totally understand.
You know,
I totally understand.
For it for me on baseball. They'll never get another dime of my money.
Okay, a lot of people feel that it's crazy to spend millions on a Stradivarius too. But you know, I guess to each his own on that. Let me get in some other open line calls. Russ Wayne is in Alexandria, Louisiana, on Coast to Coast. Wayne.
Hey, Ian, how you doing, buddy?
Okay. All right, we got a few minutes. Let's get a few more calls in. Go ahead.
I'm the last who called. I don't have any knowledge to impart, but I do have a question that's been bothering me for a while. Not really bothering, but on my mind for a while. Not a conspiratorial type person, but listen, the scanners that we're talking about on the airport that they're still using, okay?
Wait, the scanners, did I hear you say?
Yeah, the scanners, you know, the where they scan your whole body and all that.
Okay, right. Okay, fine. Yep.
Just your opinion. Where would we be without the underwear bomber? And I've thought about this a while. Where would we be without the underwear bomber?
Moving faster through security.
What would have happened? I mean, that was the crux of that started all the scanner thing. And it seems to me that they came on board really fast with that. It's like it was just waiting in the wings. So I guess
totally.
I guess
completely.
You know, it seems a little bit suspicious to me that, again, I don't want to be conspiratorial, but look, it seems that something triggered that, and maybe they were looking for something to trigger that, and wasn't.
I think it's exactly right. I'll stop you right there and say you don't have to go a word further into it. The fact that I believe it was the head of the TSA has already said that the full body scanners would not have stopped the underwear bomber.
Right.
So obviously it was a technology in search of a justification.
Yeah.
And we've moved to it. And for what?
Right. And then, you know, if that wouldn't have happened, what would be today? You know, and was that a whole big scheme to get this going? You know, just something I thought about.
I'm not a hard sell on that, Wayne. I'm really not. We talked about it one night and we actually did an hour or two on it. And there's all sorts. I mean, it's just the levels of the holes within our security system at the airports, as reported by the TSA itself, are so profound that it just makes so much of this belief in our emphasis in technology to be our salvation. When it really comes down to it, it's a great way to move money. It's just another way to get, you know, taxpayer money moved from this column into that column. because it doesn't really make us any safer. It doesn't really stop anything. We know that. And guns still get through. Knives still get through. It sounds crazy, but it happens all the time. Now, maybe the very first time that they're able to use this technology to actually stop somebody, maybe that'll change everything. But, you know, and then there are people within the TSA that have put the focus on the technology that reads people's facial expressions and, you know, tries to pick up these cues using cameras. And I read somewhere that, you know, they justified it by saying, look, it's working. We've already stopped 1,500 people using this technology, but they didn't get any arrests. I mean, it's just, yeah, they used 1,500 people got stopped and harassed with this technology, but it still doesn't prove its worth. And I think that'll continue to be a story in 2011. But maybe they will. Maybe they'll stop somebody using one of those scanners from doing something awful, and it'll finally prove its worth. Leon is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast. Open lines. Leon?
Hey, I thank you for taking my call. I listen to you on Rush, 94.5 out of the Triad area in North Carolina.
Glad to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a couple of things I'd like to touch on if you have time.
Got to be quick.
Okay, got to be quick. In this area that have Art Bell somewhere in time.
Yep.
Okay.
Classic replays.
And he was talking to Alex Currier tonight. And okay. Alex Currier was talking in 1998 about there being 11 dimensions. And that's just recently been proven in the unified theory that they're working on at Duke in just the last couple years. That was 98. So, you know, evidently there's a lot of truth in what he's saying, but a lot of times the best lie is one that contains a lot of truth.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Another thing, the email. Do I have to be a Streamlink member to get an email to George Norrie?
No, I don't think so. You can. Wait a second. Let me just finish. There's email links. I don't know how often he reads them. I don't read every email that comes in for me either. There's just so many emails, Leon. But they're there, and you can link up to them through coasttocoastam.com. People find a way of getting in touch with me one way or another, so I try to respond, whether it's a Facebook page or. And George will read them. He just may not necessarily respond. So. I wish I could give you a better answer than that, but I'm not George. Hey, Roy.
Hey, Ian.
Hey, real quickly, you're also from North Carolina. We got a minute for you. Go ahead.
All right. I'm disturbed with this, like, apocalyptic gun violence we're having, and we cannot do the simplest thing about it, it seems. We could stop selling these gangster guns, the worst of these murder machines, tomorrow, like assault rifles and easily concealed semi-automatic pistols. But it looks like the National Rifle Association are our lords and masters. Does this bother you?
I don't know about our lords and masters. I think like any special interest group, they watch their interests specially.
They've got a lot of power. Congress,
yeah,
the president are afraid of them. They will not do anything.
There's a lot of special interest groups that wield a
disproportionate. Not like this, man. I think it's all due to the Kennedy assassination. All the we're such cowards to face the truth that we cannot face. If we said boo to those poltroons, they would fall down on the ground and shake like a jellyfish. We could do this tomorrow. We could outlaw the worst. We could cut the gun violence in half tomorrow.
They may not. It may. Thank you, Roy. It may actually, the idea of say limiting the number of bullets in a clip for a pistol like the one that was used in the shooting of Congressman Gabby Giffords, that may pass regardless of whether the NRA likes it or not. And you know they're always operating on the slippery slope theory. That if you allow one of these bills to come through, then 10 will follow. That's just how they view the world. I think you might find that one will get changed. There really isn't a reason for even a sportsman to have a clip that big. And if two sportsmen in the United States you know, really do go shooting with a gun like that or like to go practice with a gun like that, they'll still get by, you know. I think that, but so we'll see. We'll watch what happens in 2011. All good calls. Let's go to our main guest for tonight. Mark Headley gets to take a victory lap on the things he said after he escaped Scientology, coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.